We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome to Overnight America. Producer Mike trying to get me to stretch that out even further. He knows that when we have guests in studio, it's a little bit different doing that part live. It's a cold night, but it's starting to warm up. And this hour, we have some very special guests. And don't worry, we have a lot to get to on the hearings. We'll do that next hour. But we have two very special guests that are joining us in studio. And the book is called 9/12, The Epic Battle of the Ground Zero Responders. And if you remember, Bill Groner, we had you on the phone, I would say, 2 months ago, something like that?
Beginning of September.
And you have Tom, you're technically the author, right?
We're both co-authors. But Bill was the attorney who represented more than 10,000 Ground Zero responders, and I'm a journalist who worked with him to tell the story.
I'm glad you guys are in town. What brings you in?
The Jewish Book Fair.
Yeah.
We're going to be there tomorrow at 10:30. We'll be putting on a little presentation, and then we'll be signing books.
Perfect. How is St. Louis treating you so far? Because it's cold here.
It's cold, but we're having a good time. We made it to Ted Drew's. There was no line. We were very happy. And we had some barbecue at lunch, so, you know, we can't complain.
You said Sugar Fire. You made a stop
there. Yes, we did.
Sugar Fire is very good.
Yes, Tom, the researcher, did his homework, decided, you know, the top hits of the place, and we're trying to nail them all.
Greg, you're not giving recommendations. There's so many great food places out here to check out. But, I mean, you guys, New York and L.A.?
Yep. So
there's also some pretty amazing food options there. I always like to brag about St. Louis, though. They do have some. You don't expect it to be this good when you get out here.
And, you know, when we're here, we want to eat the local, you know.
Yeah, you said you did toasted ravioli?
Yep. No. We're hitting all the covering all the bases.
Awesome. I love hearing that. So you'll be at the festival tomorrow.
Yep.
And people are going to be able to hear this story. And we should probably reintroduce your book and everything that's inside of it, because everyone's familiar just in the most recent months because of high-profile celebrities like Jon Stewart testifying in front of Congress. And essentially, I think his words were having to hold your hat out asking for donations when it comes to these first responders that were begging to get the care that they deserve. And it was really terrible. But that fight didn't start this year or last year. It actually started the day after September 11th. And the shameful thing is it took that long for the first responders to get the guarantees and the ease of mind that should have just been granted to them to begin with. So let's talk about this project. It's 9/12, The Epic Battle of the Ground Zero First Responders. What got you guys interested in the story to begin with?
Well, having represented them during the 9-year litigation, it was pretty surreal. Many times during those 9 years, I felt that this is a story that had to be told. Mm-hmm. It was a confluence of an amazing medical story, because society has never seen dust like this, that with its synergistic effects and the devastating health consequences.
Yeah.
Politicians were quite involved. The press was involved. The litigation was considered the largest and most complex mass tort in history. Mm-hmm. So all throughout, I felt this is a story that's, you know, it's a piece of history and it needs to be told.
You think the press was mostly positive, or were there some people that were not covering this positively?
You know, the press was very, you know, they had a lens and they had a bias. And throughout most of it, it was in our favor. Mm-hmm. But I sort of knew by the end of the case, when the concept of settlement and lawyers' fees mm-hmm. were going to come into play, that they would take the side of my clients and say things like, you know, the settlement isn't enough, the lawyers are getting paid too much. And they did. So, you know, they were consistent in really representing the interests of my clients. And I don't have any problem with that at all.
But I think one of the sort of untold stories was that in the beginning, a lot of the New York press was not covering this, mm-hmm. and some of the earliest headlines and breakthroughs that the air wasn't safe was in fact reported by papers like the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the Sacramento Bee. They were the ones who found out that the air was as caustic as, you know, ammonia or Drano.
Wow.
And there is some people feel that the New York press in the beginning was too beholden to the establishment, who really wanted to get this message that everybody's fine, everything's okay, there's no danger here, New York's back open for business. And they were also beholden, perhaps, to their advertisers, the New York stores.
Yeah.
And so the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the Sacramento Bee were out there ahead of those papers. But throughout this 9-year experience, there were a lot of moments where, and Bill can talk about this, where you'd wake up in the morning, open the paper, and things would change. Mm. Or when Jon Stewart would go on his show and completely change the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I often thought that they were co-counsel. They were incredibly involved. I mean, this was 9/11, and everyone's lens was on this particular case. So the press would do things like investigate the dust itself. So they, on the front page of one a newspaper, they found an old garment with the dust on it. Then they had it tested with laboratories, and they released the results.
Huh.
The New York Times did an amazing piece about the proper respiratory protection. They really dove pretty deeply into it. So it was really quite incredible, the level to which they were involved.
This is something we quite haven't seen in the past. This was a brand new thing, trying to figure out what this was made of and really what kind of effects it has to a human body. I mean, that was a brand new thing after September 11th.
Well, imagine 210-story buildings that collapse on themselves with all the office equipment, treated carpeting, computers, monitors, and a jet airplane with jet fuel that's burning a fire at 2,000 degrees. Mm-hmm. So there's the pancaking of all these materials, and they're sort of being cooked up and incinerated at this high heat, creating a toxic stew. As you said, never before seen.
When was the Twin Towers built? Was that the 70s? Maybe.
Yes, I believe it was 79.
Yeah, because you can look at the materials they would have used for something like that, too, which changes over the years, the different safety standards or the quality of materials, and that plays a factor, too, that sitting dormant for as long as it was, and who knows what kind of quality control there was in the building materials to begin with.
But it was not at the time, they did not say, this is an environmental disaster.
Yeah.
This is Three Mile Island or Fukushima nuclear plant or Chernobyl. They didn't say this is a hot zone, stay out. No, what Mayor Giuliani and the EPA administrator Christine Todd Whitman said was the air may be irritating, but it's safe.
When you look at the footage taken from the street after the towers fell, and you would just see almost what would look like a volcano ash. It would just turn the corner and then would just rush down the street, and people running from it. That was so highly concentrated, and you saw people just completely from head to toe. You couldn't identify them because of all of the dust that was on them.
So imagine people who worked in that dust for 10 months.
Oh, yeah. Being told that it was not as bad as it really was.
And you have, you know, Mayor Giuliani walking around without his breathing apparatus on.
Right. Well, we want to talk more about this. We're going to spend the hour talking about 9/12, the epic battle of the Ground Zero responders. I have a lot of questions. I also have texting up. So if anyone has a question and you want to text it in, we can do that at 314-436-7900 on Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. The book, Ground, it's all about Ground Zero. What happened after September 11th? the day after, September 12th, the epic battle of the Ground Zero responders. Bill Groner and also Tom Tyholtz, that very much I'm happy that you guys decided to stick around the whole hour. This is really nice of you guys. Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Absolutely.
How many people did you actually represent, first responder-wise, after 9/11?
It was around 10,500.
Yeah. What was the opposition from the government? What were they trying to defend against?
Well, their stated defense that they spent over $200 million in lawyers' fees to pursue was that they had immunity, that it was a civil defense emergency, and during such circumstances, they can't be held to be responsible. Mm-hmm. They were looking at an archaic 1950s era, Korean era statute. We thought it didn't apply at all. The lower court, we spent years arguing about that. The lower court decided that it did not apply. They then appealed to the appellate court in the federal system, which is one step below the Supreme Court. Sonia Sotomayor was on that court, and she and two other judges, in an argument that I will never forget, did something incredibly unusual. They, instead of just talking about the law like they're supposed to, they literally looked at the defense and said, why don't you just pay the $1 billion that's been set aside?
Mm-hmm. Which is a point that blew my mind, which is that in the days and months after 9/11, the federal government, through FEMA, put aside $1 billion, that's billion with a B, $1 billion for New York City for anyone who was injured as a result of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And the city decided, rather than spending that money on the Ground Zero responders, to spend the money paying lawyers to defend against lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And eventually, 9 years later, when they settled and paid out $800 million, I mean, they could have done that at the beginning.
Yeah.
They didn't have to spend $200 million on lawyers to end up, you know, at the same place.
I just don't get it sometimes, the way government operates or thinks. And you have an obligation to protect the first responders, the ones that didn't even think twice when it came to going in and seeing if there was anyone they could help or anyone that they can find that may have survived that tragedy. The fact that we were even debating that these people deserve benefits through the rest of their life based on the illnesses that they'll receive directly caused by that event for the rest of their life, it makes you look at it and just say, how could you have any confidence government could do anything right?
Well, and beyond that, you know, just if God forbid something happens again, these are the people we're going to rely on. So you got to take care of them because we need those people.
Yeah.
You know, they are, as you said, selfless, and they would do it again. But we need to support them always. And, you know, I think Mayor Bloomberg saw himself as sort of the financial executive for New York. And he was afraid that if he settled cases, 10,000 cases, there would be 30,000 more. And he wasn't doing his job if he opened up New York to such potential financial danger.
Right.
And that's sort of the best justification that I can provide for why, you know, they were so reluctant.
So, you know, I wonder on the insurance side. So first responders, does that include police and fire?
Yes.
And so you would normally think that they would be covered through their policies, through, you know, the police or fire union, if something were to happen to them on the job. So the money, the above and extra, what did that go towards?
Well, they would be covered under disability policies. Mm-hmm. And if it was an on-the-job disability, they'd be getting three-quarters pay. Mm. And early on, the city was denying that these injuries were related to the Ground Zero dust, so they weren't even getting that. But once they did get that, our lawsuit was for pain and suffering. I mean, when you're injured as a result of somebody else's fault or negligence, and in this case, it was the city's failure to give them proper respiratory protection, then you're entitled to pain and suffering, not just lost earnings. So the $800 million essentially went for pain and suffering.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if this has been calculated, but I don't know. I only know a few things about how different law offices work. How many billable hours were there over this case? Do you know the total?
No, I don't know. But the we talk about the numbers in the book because it was important for us to let the judge know who had approved the fees, the amount of work done. But it was 100 million pages of medical records, tens of millions of pages of documents and reviews. It was, you know, millions of hours of, because there was, at different points, we had 100 staff or more that was working on the case over the 9 years. So it was an unbelievable endeavor.
When you have 10,000 people that you're representing.
And it wasn't a class action. The judge refused to certify it as such because there was too many disparate circumstances. Each person's exposure and injuries were different, so the judge made us bring 10,000 separate lawsuits.
How did the science change after you started to research this dust? Like, because part of this is, we mentioned this in the first break, this was something that hasn't really been talked about or at least been researched as much in the past, and that was a big part of it. But in general, that's kind of become the research that you did for the case is started to become a standard. We start to understand more of the science of it now because of that.
You know, it wasn't necessarily our research. It was just our experience in collecting the data from our clients. So, for example, at one point we realized we had about 3,000 GERD cases, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease. And there was no science that existed that said that could happen from exposure to toxic dust. Yeah. I remember talking to my gastroenterologist and saying, I need you to come up with a theory. So at one point, the CDC, Center for Disease Control, sent down the head of NIOSH, Dr. John Howard, to meet with us because we had the cohort. We had the data for 10,000 people, and we were collecting the medical records and analyzing them. So we had nurses assessing every symptom, diagnosis, test result from these millions and millions of pages of records. And we knew what was going on, but the science wasn't there. And at one point I asked Dr. Howard, this is like about 2005, I said, what about the cancers? Because we had a lot of blood cancers early on. And he said, it's beyond science, Bill. We'll probably never know. Mm. Interestingly, though, years later, he was commissioned for the U.S. government to run a study with oncologists. And they have since determined that over 70 cancers are related to the dust.
Wow. That many. That's amazing.
But imagine in the beginning, these people were developing cancer 2 or 3 years out from exposure, when normally it took 10 years, sometimes 20 years to develop those conditions. And it was very hard to say that, didn't you smoke when you were a teenager? Or does your family have a history of cancer? Or, there were a lot of reasons that made it difficult to prove.
Yeah.
But also, unfortunately, since we were in litigation battle, the defense was making every argument they could. So they were saying, hey, you're firefighters, you've been exposed to smoke and fire in the past, you do have pre-existing injuries. So, and the science wasn't really with us. So one of the most devastating parts was that my clients weren't being validated that their injuries were from the dust exposure early on, which was really a hard thing. After they took one for the team and really sacrifice themselves for people to deny them compensation or even validation that their injuries were related was really outrageous.
And they weren't being covered for PTSD, which many of them suffered. And the Zadroga Act gives them mental health benefits, which is a great thing.
Yeah. I want to talk more about some of the things you discovered. 9/12, the epic battle of the Ground Zero responders. Bill Groner and also Tom Tyholtz in studio for this hour. And two things I'll ask you when we come back from the break. The morale of some of the first responders, because it had to have been very taxing on them. You kind of hinted at that but also the champions, the ones that came out and some of the people that really helped the cause. We talked about John Stewart. I'm sure there's a lot of other people that really helped the cause. I'd like to talk about some of their stories too. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
And welcome back to Overnight America with special guests this hour in studio, the authors of 9/12, the epic battle of the Ground Zero responders, Bill Groner. And also Tom Tyholtz, thank you again for sticking around the entire hour here.
Our pleasure.
I wanted to ask you a few things because at the start of the interview, we talked about why you're in town, the Jewish Book Festival. If people wanted to come see you and talk to you about the book, what do they have to do?
They have to show up tomorrow at 10:30. Where is the festival? Is it at the...
Yeah, hold on. I'll put your mic up. You can say it because you know the location's better. Yeah, pull that around here real quick. Hello. Yeah, you're live right now.
I'm on the air.
Yeah. So you're Greg.
You can find, yeah.
So where is the book festival?
Greg, you can find Tom and Bill tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning at the Jewish Community Center in Creve Coeur. That is the Stanberg Family Complex.
Great.
They'll be speaking for an hour, followed by question and answer, and then you can purchase their book and get it signed.
So really, you can just show up.
Show up.
Cop, yeah. Get everything taken care of when you're there.
You can show up and, yeah. And get a ticket.
We'd love to see you.
Jewish Book Festival, 10:30.
Yep.
Creve Coeur. What's the building again?
It's the Stanberg Family Complex.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Creve Coeur is a beautiful place, too. They got that one park there. What's that, Creve Coeur Lake? Or what's the one lake that's out there?
You've got Creve Coeur Lake that's in Creve Coeur Park.
Yeah. Nice. St. Louis has some really great places. That's a really nice location to have the festival. So 9/12, that's when the battle really started to try to get the first responders the care that they deserved and needed. And it must have been pretty morale-breaking to think that the government was fighting them for something that they should have been taking care of to begin with. So what were some of the mentality and the mindsets of the people you're representing?
I think during the process of the 9 years, they were battling injuries, they were battling sort of truth and justice. You know, people were denying that they had the injuries from the dust or that they were potentially exaggerating. And litigation really opens wounds and keeps them really raw. And it was very, very difficult for our clients. I think they bonded, though, amongst themselves. And I think that's something that was great that happened. And they created these groups. And to this day, there are groups of responders and organizations that have spawned where they can, talk to each other and feel good about each other.
Yeah.
But I have to say, though, that at the end of the day, no matter what they've been through, most of them that we speak to say that if they had to do it again, they would do it over and do it the same way. These people, their selflessness and their sense that, they were taking one for the team and they should have, getting Wall Street back up and running and taking care of the city, state, and nation was more important than our health is just really something we talk about in the book, and I think makes me feel great about humanity.
Yeah.
And it's really important, now when we have a very divisive time and people think, that they're far apart and they're just pulled apart, that here are these people who put their lives on the line for their city, their state, and their nation. They do it all over again.
Didn't think twice about it.
Didn't think twice and wouldn't think twice. And that's the spirit. I mean, they were, firefighters and police officers and emergency, responders. And so they are people who already have a personality that they want to help people. But their spirit, interviewing them, reading their stories, talking to them, I was just struck over and over again by their spirit. And I think there's something really important that all of us could learn from these responders.
As a matter of fact, I'm donating my proceeds to a charitable enterprise, and what we're in the midst of working on is creating an education initiative for middle and high school students in honor of the responders. To talk and think about and write about society, community, and interpersonal skills that are critical, such as empathy, respect, communication, and compromise. And we hope that that will be the legacy of these responders.
Yeah, and certainly a lot of them, none of them would have been alive at the time of September 11th when the time of the book comes out. And that has to be something that always surprises me on the anniversary date. You hear about, I just thought that was something that was a story, and I didn't realize 9/11 was an actual historical event because they were either too young or not alive by the time it happened. That's kind of scary, too, that we're already so far removed from it that some people don't even know it existed. That's surprising and sad.
We're a generation, removed from it, and a lot of people don't understand it and connect it. And I think a lot of the educational systems are looking at, what do we talk about, when do we talk about it, and how do we talk about it?
Yeah. Who are some of the people that you would look at as champions of this, the ones that were really big in support of trying to make sure these first responders were taken care of the way they should have been taken care of. Because we mentioned John Stewart, and he's been very vocal and he's been very influential in getting people's attention and their eyes looking towards this very worthy thing. Who are some of the other people that you have talked to and you've worked with that have been, like him, champions of this?
I'll talk about, I mean, there's so many, so mm-hmm. I'll just pick one. I'm sure Tom will pick one or more. I want to talk about Gary Acker. Gary Acker was, and we portray him in the book, and he was a wonderful man. He came to our law office a lot. We got very connected with him. My staff got connected. He was part of AT&T Disaster Recovery Services. And when this first happened, he went down to the site to try and get the infrastructure of the telecommunications back up and running. And because it was so critical, he actually slept most every night for the first month in his van. He wasn't given proper respiratory equipment. He got the infrastructure back up and running. He was in charge of his team. And unfortunately, over time, he got cancer and succumbed to it. And passed away. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed Allison, his widow, down in Florida, and we got very close with her. And we talk a lot about her thoughts and about Gary in our book. But I think what was most revealing about him is his upbeat energy all throughout the process, even when he was deeply sick, and the fact that he also told everyone, this was my job, this was my love, this was my service to my country, and if I had to do it over, I'd do it again.
Wow. Tom, do you have any of those stories?
Well, listen, you know, the responders, I mean, to do this book, we looked at, you know, many, many responders' oral histories, their stories. I interviewed them. Dr. Benjamin Luft, who runs a medical center out in Stony Brook, Long Island, he organized an oral history mm-hmm. of Ground Zero responders that's now available in the Library of Congress. And each story is in of itself amazing. So the people that we picked to represent, the few that we chose to represent the many, are each of them incredible, whether it's Detective Candace Baker or Lyndon Harris, who was a parish priest at St. Paul's and set up a food kitchen mm-hmm. for the people working there and developed respiratory problems himself. Whether it was Sister Cindy Mahoney, who the press called the Angel of Ground Zero, who was caring for people and blessing people and herself died from respiratory ailments. I mean, there were a lot of champions. Of course, there were politicians, the New York Congressional and Senate delegation were all very active in this and came together in a nonpartisan way, though clearly Senators Clinton and Gillibrand and Congressperson Jerry Nadler and mm-hmm. Carolyn Maloney spearheaded the fight for the Zadroga Act. Mm-hmm. But people from all over the country supported it. And, you know, there were people at the Sierra Club and at environmental organizations. I mean, what's amazing about this story is that it was operating on so many levels, on a medical level, on a scientific level. There were doctors at Mount Sinai Hospital treating the responders. You know, the list goes on. And what we tried to do in this book is sort of make it into a narrative mm-hmm. so that you get a sense of all the different pieces and the roles they played in a readable, compelling what I hope is a page-turner for most people.
In the book 912, The Epic Battle of the Ground Zero Responders. In part of this, too, I'm sure, it has to be a little humbling knowing who you're representing, and it probably adds a little bit of pressure knowing you don't want to let them down. I'm going to guess that played some of factor in your work over those 9 years.
You know, I certainly one of the greatest challenge of my life. I was humbled, honored, and it was a privilege to represent them. You know, what lawyer doesn't want to represent heroes?
Yeah.
And it was enormously difficult, especially early on when we got so many calls and new cases. You would think that a lawyer who gets a new call and a new case is happy because it's good for business. Mm. But it was really a kick in the stomach to constantly, you know, get phone calls, you know, and by the thousands from healthy people in the prime of their lives and who succumbed to serious illness. But it was certainly, you know, experience of a lifetime, and I was honored to do it.
Let's talk more about the Jewish Book Festival when we come back. Bill Groner and Tom Tyholtz, author of 9/12, The Epic Battle of the Ground Zero Responders, telling the story of what happened after September 11th and all those heroes that went there to help. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
We are the voice of Cardinal Nation, America's sports voice, KMOX. Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Well, I want to make sure everyone knows that tomorrow you'll have the opportunity to meet Tom and Bill. They're going to be at the Jewish Book Festival in Creve-Coeur. You can look that up online. 10:30 is when your guys' talk starts. Is that right?
That's 10:30. Right.
10:30. And the book is 9/12, The Epic Battle of the Ground Zero Responders. And I wanted to, I guess, talk about how you guys collaborated with each other, because one is in New York, one is in Los Angeles. You're kind of on different ends. One, you're looking at it from a journalistic standpoint, and you're trying to research what went through all of these different people's lives and what went through the court system. And then you have the other side of it, which is the person that was there defending and working on the ground and trying to come up with the case, make the case for all of these people to tell the government, hey, you need to take care of our first responders. How did you guys work together? What was the collaboration process like?
Well, I think the really interesting thing was the first thing came to my mind was does Tom ramp up, and how do we upload the 9 years of my experience with the millions of pages of documents and the complexities that would take years? And Tom's a bit of an animal, and I learned so much about journalists and have such respect for them that originally I was just reading every few months of emails, because everything was on email, and there must be 100,000 emails over the 9 years. And then I would summarize it, and he would interview me. And then Tom at one point said, let me just do that. And he just started reading thousands and thousands of emails, maybe 6 months at a time. What was amazing, at one point he would jump off and say, you know what, I just learned that there's a book related to something I just read in your email. I'm going to go read the book. I'll be back on this in 3 days. So he just absorbed everything he possibly could.
Wow.
But, you know, it was great because in those emails, you kind of got the tone, the way people razzed each other, mm-hmm. when people were angry at each other. You got the strategy. Mm-hmm. You got just the ups and downs. Because what I loved about this story, what was so great about this story, is not only obviously is it an important story, a historic story, a story that matters, but mm-hmm. you had a sort of David and Goliath aspect to this, where you know, people don't always think of trial lawyers and personal injury lawyers in the highest terms, and you had these personal injury lawyers going up against these Ivy League educated corporate attorneys who were billing at, you know, hundreds of dollars an hour, getting paid all the time, racking up big fees. And so there was a David and Goliath street fighter against that aspect, defending these heroes, and just being able to know the ups and downs was a great experience. We were also lucky that Bill, being sort of a almost, you know, anal compulsive, almost OCD kind of person, had scanned and gathered every document and had them in a Dropbox that I could sit in my office in Santa Monica and just read.
Wow.
So I just read and read and read and read and read.
Well, before I wrote the book, or we wrote the book, I had to compile this information because I taught a law class for 3 years at Boston University School of Law, my alma mater. So I collected, you know, all the medical transcripts, all the depositions, all the court conferences, all the press articles, and all these other documents. I do want to say that one other challenge that we had, which was fascinating, was how do we create a pace in the book that spans 9 years, that has the intensity – with the way that we all experienced it. So it was an enormously intense, surreal experience. Every day something different was happening for many, many years. And how do we capture that? And the way we ended up is Tom chose the vehicle of you doing very short chapters. Some of the chapters are 1 and 2 pages. Mm-hmm. And each new chapter is a new energy, whether we went from the press to the medicine to the litigation. And I thought it was a fascinating way to attack that issue.
And I won't say that this is the James Patterson of nonfiction books, but we took a lesson from him. Mm-hmm. That short chapters really helps the pace of the book
to move through it.
Yeah. Now,
you know, I had to look this up real quick because you had me curious. You said you had over 1 million pages of documents that were compiled over those 9 years?
Multi-millions.
Multi-millions. Well, okay. So 1 million sheets of paper, if you were to print them all out, would be 328 feet high. A little fun fact. So if you have multi-millions, you may probably have more paper. If you were to go from the base of the St. Louis Arch, it would probably be higher than the arch, which is, 630 feet, 620 feet. You probably would even surpass that. Wow. How about it?
How about this? Because they call this the most complex mass tort in history. We had, I believe, over 100 million data fields of medical information that we had to assess. So we had round-the-clock IT people whose job it was to take that data, put it into the system so we could push buttons and understand all the different aspects.
Wow. The Jewish Book Festival is happening, and you are going to be appearing tomorrow at 10:30 in Creve Coeur. Just do a quick search online. If people wanted to look you up, maybe they're not in St. Louis, they're listening somewhere else, and they wanted to find your book, 9/12, The Epic Battle of the Ground Zero Responders. Where can they find it?
We have a webpage, 912thebook.com, 912.
And there's this thing called Amazon.
Yeah, but the 912, thebook.com also catalogs all these recordings in the press and the events. Oh,
and there's an audio book, and I'm the voice of the audio book.
That's right. You were talking about that.
So if audiobooks is your jam,
yeah,
then you can download it.
With Audible, you can get it right now. Yep. On Amazon as well. I can see the books up there. You have 5-star rating. You have people are really responding positively to this. It looks like a lot of people are giving it 5 stars. Engaging account, compelling, people are saying about it. A compelling page turner, amazing book, humble read, required reading. So a lot of great praised reviews on Amazon, which is hard to do because Amazon and anyone's a mixed bag when you go to look at reviews online. So a lot of praise should say a lot about this book. And
well,
they can
you.
Meet you in person tomorrow, which is even cooler than that, right? They can give you an in-person review. They want to come tell you to your face. It's at the Jewish Book Festival. And again, that's in Creve Coeur. Craig, hold on one more time. Let me pull your microphone up. What's the building again?
You can find Bill and Tom tomorrow at the Jewish Community Center. In Creve Coeur, is the Steinberg Family Complex.
Right, Jewish Community Center in Creve Coeur. 10:30 is when it starts, but get there a little bit early, of course. Be able to put that up. You see, you're smiling. You didn't think you'd be on tonight. You're on twice now.
Love being on radio.
I want to thank you guys for spending the whole hour with us here. Bill Groner and also Tom Tyholtz. 9/12 is the book. It's 9/12, The Epic Battle of the Ground Zero Responders. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us on.
I think it's cool.
Thank you.
You said you were doing all kinds of appearances around town. I'm glad we did the full hour. That's neat. Don't have to do 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here. Coming up in the next hour, we know the hearings were today. I know you want to react to them, so let's go over it. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.